Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program number 296, The Return of the Rising Sun. This is being recorded on April 29th of the year 2001. In Side 1 of this broadcast, we looked at the reemergence of fascism in Japan. I say reemergence because just as is the case in many countries, after the Second World War, in fact, fascism was not removed from Japan, but rather was redirected. It was eclipsed by, ostensibly at least, democratic elements. And in fact, much of the fascist establishment of Japan was deliberately redirected, or perhaps resurrected would be a better word, in order to perpetuate it would be a better word still, in order to utilize it as an anti-communist asset in the Cold War. Beyond that, as we looked at in For the Record Program number 290, the Japanese zaibatsu, the family trusts that were the economic heart of Japanese fascism and that we looked at in a big way in Miscellaneous Archive Show M26, were perpetuated as well, and they evolved into the koretsu, the modern Japanese economic powers. And they did so on they were resurrected on the foundation of the Kido Flight Capital Organization that we looked at in For the Record Program number 290. Koichi Kido was Emperor Hirohito's Lord Privy Seal, and he expatriated the Japanese capital that was looted from the occupied nations of Asia in World War II, and then that looted capital was then repatriated and served as the foundation for Japan's economic resurgence. I would note, too, that the Japanese capital looted in World War II appears to have been the foundation for the M Fund that we looked at in For the Record Program number 290, and that we revisited in the first side of this program. That fund was allegedly founded by and directed by Kakui Tanaka, a former Liberal Democratic Party prime minister, whose daughter is now the new foreign minister of Japan, having been so appointed by Prime Minister Koizumi. We're going to take a look at another and more lengthy and detailed examination of the reemergence of Japanese fascism, and we're going to be taking a look in particular at a reemergence of what, for all intents and purposes, are the patriotic societies that helped bring fascism to Japan in the first place. We took a look at the patriotic societies in RFA number 7, the aforementioned Miscellaneous Archive Show M26, and in For the Record Program number 291. We're going to take a look at them once again. We also took a look at the Patriotic Society's role in the May 15th incident briefly in Side 1 of this broadcast. We're going to be turning to an article in the Searchlights issue of January of 2001. This is Searchlight number 307. The Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication, not to be mistaken for the American Spotlight, a similar title but an ideological opposite political stance. The Searchlight can be contacted at 37B New Cavendish Street, London, WC1M8JR. Their website is at searchlightmagazine.com. Searchlight Magazine is one word. We're going to take a look now at the Searchlight's January 2001 issue, number 307. This is an article by Kenny Coyle in Tokyo. That man's last name, C-O-Y-L-E. It's entitled, Japanese Nationalism Revives. The article reads as follows. On a wintry Sunday afternoon, a convoy of black minibuses draped in Japanese imperial flags and with loudspeakers blaring crisscrosses the narrow streets of a seaside resort just south of Tokyo. The sound system broadcasts nationalist slogans and militarist songs. This is a Gaisan Kutsudo, or ultra-right propaganda cortege, a regular sight on the streets of most Japanese cities. By the way, in the very first article from the New York Times with which we began our broadcast, we took a look at a similar Gaisan Kutsudo as well. Continuing with this article. Although often dismissed by some observers as a deluded lunatic fringe, the Japanese far right is well-funded and well-connected to the center of power. Just as worrying, the nostalgia for Japan's imperial past, as well as an unashamed reverence for Japan's war in the 1930s and 1940s, is once again openly espoused by mainstream politicians. Of the three main defeated Second World War powers, Japan has come to terms with its past the least. It signed the Anti-Comintern Pact with Nazi Germany in 1936. Italy added its name the following year. The pact was not merely, as its name suggests, an anti-communist program. It also formalized spheres of influence among the fascist powers, giving Japan a free hand in Manchuria and in Manchuria in northern China. Now, more than half a century after the end of the war, Japanese nationalism is once again in fashion. Many Japanese believe their country should assert a stronger military profile to equal its economic power. As with the German Reich, historical revisionism now attests that the defeat of the Japanese in the Pacific allowed the spread of communism. Symptomatic of the recent revival of the nationalists' respectability have been several slips of the tongue, unquote, by Prime Minister Yoshiro Mori. In a speech to Liberal Democratic Party supporters in his native Ishikawa Prefecture in June of 2000, Mori called for Jugo, J-U-G-O, literally, behind the guns support. Japanese militarists used the term during the Second World War to encourage women to support the war effort of soldiers fighting overseas by taking care of the children and family on the home front. Mori said, quote, "I may be scolded again if I use an old term, but I would like to ask you kindly to take care of the Jugo and protect this community. I know it is difficult for young reporters to understand the meaning of the term, but we will be fighting on the front, so I want to ask you to take care of the Jugo to protect this community while I'm away." That reported in the Japan Times of June 11th of the year 2000. This followed an earlier remark that caused deeper and more widespread outrage even from partners in his coalition government. Speaking to a gathering of parliamentarians belonging to Shinto Seiji Renmai, a political group of the Association of Shinto Shrines, Mori declared, quote, "We have made efforts to make the public realize that Japan is a divine nation centering on the emperor. It's been 30 years since we started our activities based on this thought." That reported on the Japan Times of May 17th of the year 2000. In the next passage, we're going to once again be revisiting the topic of the Yasukuni Shrine. That is the shrine that the May 15th assassins visited just before going to the home of the Japanese Prime Minister to assassinate him. And it's the shrine that the new Prime Minister of Japan, Mr. Kozumi, has said that he will visit as well. And that promise to visit that has stirred up a major controversy. Returning to the Searchlight article, the similarity to the widely used wartime term that exalted the Japanese as a divine race, unquote, was not lost on observers. Mori merely apologized for any misunderstandings that his remark caused rather than the remark itself. Many LDP politicians, including senior ministers, continue to make annual public visits to the Yasukuni Shrine in Tokyo, which honors the Japanese military, including convicted A-class war criminals. Yet Japan's Great East Asia War, which cost the lives of 3.5 million Japanese and perhaps 15 to 20 million other Asian victims, remains a fiercely controversial issue at home and to Japan's Asian neighbors, particularly China and North and South Korea. The 1998 bestseller by U.S.-Chinese author Iris Chang, The Rape of Nanking, which chronicles the Japanese slaughter of that city in 1937, claiming as many as 300,000 Chinese lives, was denounced by a group of right-wing academics and historians for its distortions and exaggerations, unquote. That sentence again. The 1998 bestseller by U.S.-Chinese author Iris Chang, The Rape of Nanking, which chronicles the Japanese slaughter of that city in 1937, claiming as many as 300,000 Chinese lives, was denounced by a group of right-wing academics and historians for its, quote, distortions, unquote, and exaggerations, unquote. Quote, "If the Chinese had capitulated when the Japanese army ordered them to do so, this incident would not have taken place," said Akira Nakamura, a history professor at Tokyo University in Nikko. Similarly, A film on the event surrounding the massacre by Hollywood director John Woo was picked up by the ultra-right, who threatened, was picketed by the ultra-right, excuse me, who threatened moviegoers and slashed movie screens. That last sentence again. Similarly, a film on the event surrounding the massacre by Hollywood director John Woo was picketed by the ultra-right, who threatened moviegoers and slashed cinema screens. In Japan these days, democracy is not faring very well. This is a time of danger, Mr. Shigefumi Matsuzawa, an MP for the center-right opposition Democratic Party, told the Houston Chronicle at the time. When democracy deteriorates, extremism of the right wing often emerges, unquote. That same year also saw the release of the film Pride, The Fateful Moment, which critics see as an apology for Japan's wartime Prime Minister General Tojo, who was hanged as a war criminal. The film's star, Masahiko Tsugawa, said it was a way of renewing Japanese morale. Quote, "If this movie, which shows a unique Japanese spirit that disappeared at the end of the war, manages to give Japanese families and young people pride, we will have achieved something," he told a press conference sponsored by a far-right wing grouping within the LDP. And that is from a Reuters story of May 11th of 1998. The links between the far-right and the ruling LDP are intimate, explains Mr. Haruki Naranaka, who has closely monitored their activity for several years. The LDP always found it useful to have teams of street fighters on its side during industrial disputes against the powerful Japanese Communist Party, or to disrupt protests against the U.S. military presence in Japan. It was for just their street muscle that elements of the Yakuza and the Japanese far right were utilized and returned back to power. And one of the individuals who had a lot to do with that was the aforementioned Major General Charles Willoughby, MacArthur's G2. His name at birth was Karl Adolf von Zschäpe und Wiedenbach. He was a German-born fascist who was an ardent admirer of Francisco Franco, the fascist dictator of Spain. We've dealt with Willoughby in numerous broadcasts, including a miscellaneous archive show but a For the Record interview with Dick Russell, the author of The Man Who Knew Too Much, as well as in RFA's 10, 11, and 37. Willoughby appears to have been principally involved in the assassination of President Kennedy as well. We also took a look at Willoughby in For the Record program number 120. Returning once again to the article from the Searchlight, there are 2,033 ultra-right organizations that have submitted applications for a political license. They have a combined membership estimated by one German observer of around 100,000. By registering for political status, these groups are free to conduct propaganda and to raise funds. Around 500 of them are purely ideological associations publishing nationalist propaganda in various forms. Japan has a disturbing range of anti-Semitic literature. The Protocols of the Elders of Zion and the International Jew, parenthetically authored by Henry Ford, have been available in Japanese since 1924 and Mein Kampf since 1934. Recent homegrown editions include The Jewish Plan for the Occupation of Japan, The 450-Year Secret War of Jewish Aggression Against Japan, which traces the beginning of Jewish aggression, unquote, against Japan to the arrival of Christian missionaries in the 1500s, all of whom were, quote, Jews disguised as Portuguese and Spanish, unquote. The Last Warning from the Devil, the Jews give... The Last Warning from the Devil, the Jews... Give Day's Japan the Finishing Blow, 1995, which claims that the 1995 Kobe earthquake was an artificial earthquake engineered by the Jew Freemason world dominating power. By the way, the Aum Shinrikyo cult has also exhibited profound fascist connections, and we've looked at that in a number of For the Record programs as well. Returning once again to this article. However, Mr. Naranaka estimates that perhaps 1,000 of those registered right-wing groups with grandiose titles such as Young People's Comrades, Research Association for a Great Japan, Congress of Japanese Racial Youth and Steel Helmet Association belong to the violent wing of the right. By the way, I would add that these societies are almost literally a resurrection of the Japanese patriotic and ultranationalist societies that brought fascism to Japan in the pre-World War II period. We'll be taking a look at those in a minute. Continuing. Mr. Naranaka estimates the active membership of this trend to be around 21,000 with around 2,000 Gaisensha vehicles. The fleets of propaganda cars, lorries, and vans is an essential part of the ultra-right street tactics. These Gaisen Kutsudo offer even tiny groups a formidable presence since typically they need only one driver and one agitator. Their fundraising techniques include slowly circling around large offices or factories with loudspeakers at full volume, disrupting work until the management agrees to make a donation, after which they head off elsewhere. The costs of these vehicles can range from 5 to 10 million yen, 30,000 to 60,000 pounds, depending on the size of the vehicle. Mr. Dananaka puts their combined resources at 6 billion yen, or 38 million pounds, greater than the total budget of the Japanese Social Democratic Party. And the next section here deals with what basically are the new Japanese patriotic societies. While there is a loose nationwide alliance of more than 800 far-right groups known as Zenai Kagi, the National Association of Patriotic Organizations, Mr. Haranaka points to the key difficulty in establishing an all-Japan movement. Most of these small groups are territorially based. This is because they are directly linked to the turf of local Yakuza or Japanese mafia gangs, unquote. The links between organized crime and the ultra-right are well documented. When the police crack down on Yakuza activities, gangsters find it easy to launder money through legal outlets such as the ultra-right groups, although even here almost half of the right-wing groups do not submit their accounts as they are legally obliged to do. These murky links can best be illustrated, Mr. Harinaka argues, by looking at a key figure in the pre-war Japanese right who forms a direct link to the politics of today, the late Yoshio Kodama. His life illustrates the interweaving of far-right fanaticism, big business, organized crime, and government. We took a look, by the way, at Kodama in a big way in For the Record 291 as well as in RFA 7. Continuing. In the 1930s, Kodama was active in a variety of political nationalist movements such as the Independence Youth Society Blood Brotherhood, Holy War Execution League, Federation of Radical Patriotic Workers, and Capital Rise Asia Academy, which broke strikes and attempted to assassinate political figures. Despite prison convictions, Kodama was then contracted by the Japanese government in the wholesale looting of China for raw materials for Japan's war effort. By the end of the war in 1945, his industrial empire, the Kodama Agency, was worth $175 million, or 120 million pounds. Following the Japanese surrender, Kodama was listed as a Class A war criminal, yet he served only 2 years in Tokyo's Sugamo prison. In 1949, he personally directed Yakuza gangsters against a threatened strike at the Hakutan coal mine. The second wealthiest man in Japan, he bankrolled the Liberal Democratic Party at its birth in 1955. In the 1960s, he teamed up with a then-unknown South Korean right-winger, the Reverend Sun Myung-moon, and Roichi Sasakawa, a Japanese motorboat racing millionaire. Sasakawa had organized some Japanese black shirts in the 1930s, and once described himself as the world's richest fascist. By the way, we took a look at the Kodama Agency in For the Record program number 291. We took a look at the connections between Kodama, Sasakawa, the World Anti-Communist League, and the Moon Organization in that same broadcast. We also took a look at those same connections in RFA number 7. More about the connection between these individuals and the Moon Organization, which in turn is very close to the Bush family, and the World Anti-Communist League in the following passage. The three, with the help of South Korean intelligence and Taiwanese dictator Chiang Kai-shek, helped form the Asian People's Anti-Communist League. The League set up and funded Moon's Freedom Center in the United States in 1964. Kodama was chief advisor for the Moon subsidiary Win Over Communism. In 1966, the League merged with the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations to form the World Anti-Communist League, a major international network of fascists and anti-Semites featured many times in the pages of Searchlight. Kodama's downfall came slowly in the mid-1970s when his involvement in the Lockheed scandal, which rocked Japanese politics, became public. Because of its easy connections to the centers of power, the Japanese ultra-right has not needed extra-parliamentary methods other than its noisy propaganda. But with the fragmentation of the once monolithic LDP, a growing fear of further economic recession, and tremendous regional instability, the necessary factors for the growth of a new far-right cannot be ignored. Last August, an attack by Sumiyoshi crime syndicate gangsters on the Tokyo headquarters of the ultra-right Sofusha, or Blue Wind Group, left two Yakuza gangsters dead from gunshot wounds. The dispute was apparently over unpaid debts, but the clear warning is that at least some sections of the Japanese far-right are now armed and prepared to use their weapons, even against their closest allies. By the way, note that Yoshio Kodama helped to bankroll the Liberal Democratic Party at its birth, and then was involved in the Lockheed scandal. The LDP is the party of Mr. Koizumi. Its main money man was Kakuei Tanaka, whose daughter, Makiko, is now Mr. Koizumi's foreign minister. In the first side of the broadcast, we took a look at the May 15th conspirators and their visiting of the Yasukuni Shrine immediately before embarking on their successful visit to the residence of the Prime Minister Inukai to assassinate him. Noting again in that Searchlight article the resurrection of the Japanese patriotic societies, we're going to revisit for historical purposes here what is arguably the most important incident in the wave of political assassinations that led to the rise of fascism in Japan, those assassinations performed by the patriotic societies, which appear to be reviving in Japan. Once again, we're going to return to the book Government by Assassination by Hugh Bias, the Tokyo correspondent for the New York Times. Bias's Government by Assassination, published in hardcover by Alfred A. Knopf and Company, and copyrighted 1942. What we're going to take a look at is the May 15th incident, that from May 15th, 1932, the assassination of Prime Minister Inukai, and we're going to take a look at a group of the Young Officers Movement who banded together under the title the Blood Brotherhood. We're going to take a look at their affiliation with the native land-loving school of Kasaburu Tachibana. That school was controlled by the patriotic societies and served as a nurturing point for the May 15th conspiracy. We're going to take a look at the May 15th conspirators' visit to the Yasukuni Shrine and their assassination of Mr. Inukai. Reading from Government by Assassination, the civilian wing of the Young Officers' plot was a gang called the Blood Brotherhood, or Ketsumidan, literally the Blood Oath Band. Some of them were vicious youths living on the borderland where patriotism and crime meet. Others were idle but fanatical students. All of them were idealists in their way. They were willing instruments, but they had hypnotized themselves with slogans, and they regarded themselves as more than tools. The prospect that the army would become the active force of revolution had stimulated patriots all along the line, and many currents met in the movement which culminated on May 15th. And next, of Mr. Tachibana, the head of the native land-loving school, we read, Kasaburu Tachibana was haunted by dreams in his boyhood and could not decide whether to become a statesman or a general or, sometimes, simply a good man. He had been born in the prefecture which afterwards became the site of the Naval Air Training Base and the home of the Blood Brotherhood, and his birthplace fixed his destiny. And of Tachibana's native land-loving school, one of the nurturing points for the May 15th conspiracy, we read, in 1930, Tachibana's admirers enabled him to establish a school. He called it the Native Land-Loving School, or Akyojuko. Everybody in Japan with a message to deliver, or an axe to grind, opens a school. Skipping down, those schools in the hands of the patriotic societies are at once a method of training young men for strong-arm work and a plausible excuse for extorting contributions from the rich and timid. And then we get to the May 15th incident itself. The date was May 15th, 1932. It went into Japanese history as the May 15th incident. And this again was the assassination of the Japanese Prime Minister, and it was accomplished by young officers of the Blood Brotherhood associated with the NATO land-loving school, and again they visited the Yasukuni Shrine in Tokyo prior to embarking for the Japanese Prime Minister's residence to kill him. 2 days earlier, on Friday, May 13th, two young naval officers had made a two-hour train journey from Tokyo to a place with which they were familiar, the drab country town of Tsuchura, railway station for the inland naval airbase and training school called Kasumigura Ura, the Misty Lagoon. An army cadet and a Tokyo student accompanied them. They were met by a teacher of the native land-loving school, which trained farmer boys in agriculture and patriotism. They all went to a Japanese restaurant where they were, as usual, given a private room. They did not send for geisha girls, though Tsuchura, a garrison town, has plenty. The inn's rustic slatterns served their food, and after the dishes had been cleared away, they sat late talking. On Sunday, the same men met some others in various places in Tokyo, and their actions became the May 15th incident. At 5 o'clock that Sunday evening, nine naval and military officers of ages between 24 and 28 alighted from two taxicabs at the side entrance of the Yasukuni Shrine in Tokyo. The shrine is dedicated to all members of the fighting services who have died in Japan's wars. There is no holier place in Tokyo. And then they went from the Yasukuni Shrine to the residence of Mr. Tsuyoshi Inukai, where they found him, engaged him in conversation, and then murdered him in front of his daughter-in-law and grandchild. Hugh Bias writes as follows, "They found the Prime Minister, Mr. Inukai, a diminutive, alert man of 75. His first name was Tsuyoshi, but his friends knew him as Kai, K-I. Skipping down, he was a very small man, quick and fearless. His goatee beard was of a vague gray color, which somehow suggested quite erroneously that it had once been blonde. Late in life, he attained the goal of his ambition, and he was intensely proud of being the emperor's first minister. He led the officers into a Japanese room. His daughter-in-law, carrying her baby, was with him, and one of the officers, knowing what would happen in a few minutes, unquote, as he said at the trial, told her to go away, but she stayed. The young men were rather confused, and some were impressed by the old man's calm demeanor as he asked them to take off their shoes, sit down, and talk it over. He had a cigarette in his hand, and he lit it. As I observed, said one of the officers in his testimony, our leader was willing to talk with the Prime Minister. The group that had gone to the back door burst in, headed by Lieutenant Masayoshi Yamagishi, a man of action who was carrying a dagger. No use talking, said Yamagishi. Fire! The word was shouted like an order, and they all began firing. One shot the Prime Minister in the neck, and another deliberately in the stomach. The Prime Minister sank on the matted floor and never spoke again. Believing the whole affair was over, the officers walked out. And that was the death of the Japanese Prime Minister on May 15, 1932, arguably the most important incident in the rise of fascism in Japan and the depredations of the patriotic societies, those patriotic societies once again resurgent in Japan. By the time listeners hear this program on the various member stations that carry it, there will be an annotated and detailed description of For the Record program number 296 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. That is at www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfire List is one word. Sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is now archiving the For the Record programs on real audio files. More recent For the Record programs are available at wfmu.org/Dave Emery. That's one word, DaveEmory. Older For the Record programs are being archived on a related website. That website is archive.wfmu.org/archive/D(X). That concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 296, The Return of the Rising Sun. This is being recorded on April 29th of the year 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.